Welcome to episode 16 of the SVAPA podcast. Here are your hosts, Michael and Joe.
Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of the podcast. It's Joe with you as always, and I've got Michael with me as always as well. Hello.
Hi Joe. Hi everyone. I'm glad to be back with you again. It's just a month since we last had our podcast, but since then we have had our Manchester meetup, which took place a couple of weeks ago, with a bit of audio coming up later on.
We had quite a turnout as well, didn't you?
We did. We had 12 people in total, which is brilliant. We've quite a few from Liverpool, Bolton, Sleaford and Manchester.
So here's where you guys can all get involved, because we would like more of these meetups if you would like it as well. And we're already looking into one in Liverpool and in the Northeast. So if you want to get involved with organising, or you want to take part in one, or you want to organise one in another part of the country, get in touch. Yep. podcast@svopa.co.uk.
That's it. And coming up this time, we've got Phil Longworth. He came in and we did an interview with him last week, and which is going to cover school and what he's done since. And we've also got our Around the School in 10 Lessons, which we managed to get hold of Danielle and Catherine to join us, which is actually brilliant, because getting some younger people and the changes what have taken place.
Right, so for a change, we're going to have the events first this month, because we've got a feeling you'll get bored and we get to the events at the end and so none of you know what's going on. So we're going to do the events first.
And now, here are some events. Why not come and join us at one? Or two? Or all of them?
Right, well, the first event we've got is our Llandundo weekend, which is taking place from the 1st to the 4th of November this year. And that's at the Belmont Hotel. Again, it's a Royal Blind Society hotel, and especially catering for the needs of the blind and partially sighted. So it's an ideal place to meet. It's not too big either. So we'll hope to see as many as we can there.
Okay, so the prices are £35 per person per night, and that's for dinner, bed and breakfast. Under 16s are half price, and if I remember rightly, under 2s go free.
They do, yes, that's correct. And you need to quote SVOPA, and booking is directly with the hotel on 01492 877 770. Just a reminder to anyone who has already booked, the balance is due 2 months before, so that's sort of any time now. If you've not done that already, just a little reminder for you. And it's a nice small hotel, 25 rooms, so we should best part of fill it, because there's 19 people already booked.
Yeah, we've got quite a bit of interest, so if you can make it, come along, we'd love to see you. It's always nice to see new faces. Okay, so the next event is next year, and that's running from the 7th to the 10th of March, and that's in Peterborough, and Michael's going to give you the details.
Yeah, that's taking place at the Bull Hotel, which is a nice old building, which is what do you call a listed building, and it looks pretty nice when we've looked at it online. And again, you need to book directly with the hotel, which is 01733 561 364, quoting SVOPA. Prices are £40 per person per night for dinner, bed and breakfast if you're sharing, and it's unfortunately there is a £10 supplement for single rooms, but that's just £50. But it should be a really nice hotel, and I think we mentioned last month the RNIB are happy to do a tour of their facilities nearby on Friday for those arriving early. And there's always that possibility, if we can do it, of a trip to one of the theatre shows in London on Saturday if people want. So let us know. We do need a minimum of 12 for that to work, so you know, do let us know if you're interested, and we'd love to get as many as we can there as well.
And moving really far forward now, the back end of 2014, we are thinking of having our break in York. So we haven't set any day yet, and we haven't set thought of any hotels yet. So if anybody has any ideas, you want to get involved, you want to help, you want to tell us about a hotel that you've stayed in that's particularly helpful for people with a sight impairment, or whatever, get involved, get in touch, podcast@svopa.co.uk. It's your society. We want your help.
One thing we do need to say as well, which we don't normally mention, but I think it's worth saying, I think, is, you know, we all help each other out at the weekends, but unfortunately, obviously, there's no additional support bar, obviously, our own group. So if you do require some additional support, that is something you need to sort out yourself.
Yeah, so if you want to bring, you know, we always, families come, people bring friends along, you know, anybody is welcome. You don't have to have gone to St. Vincent's. If you want to bring your family, your children, you want to just bring a friend, do that. We'd love to see you.
We would. And we've not got a date yet for next year's reunion. That's in the pipeline. So we'll hopefully have that in the next few weeks or the month. So check out the Facebook page, SVOPA, and Twitter. And what I think we'll do now is we'll move on to a little bit we recorded at SVOPA Live. Hi, we are live at the Wetherspoons in Manchester. We're at the Paramount. A good group of us here, so what I'll do is I'll sort of pass the mic round and people can say hi and who they are. I'll start with...
I'm Tanya.
Hiya, this is Rob Clark here.
Hi, it's Marie Kennedy here, would have been Schofield.
Hello, I'm Mark Kennedy, Marie's husband.
Hi, I'm Pat Scanlon.
Hi, this is Paul Roberts.
Hi, this is Debbie Cullen, Treasurer.
Hi, Kylie Green here.
Hello, this is Angela Milnes.
Hi, I'm Karen Allen.
Hi everyone, it's Danielle Thomas.
We've got a couple of our committee here tonight as well, our new members, Danielle and Rob. So we've basically all sat around, had a good meal. I think everyone's enjoyed themselves, have you?
Yes.
Yeah, and we've got a few more hours of chatting and just having a bit of fun. So does anyone want to take up a two-minute challenge?
I might do it a bit.
All right.
Yeah.
So we might do a two-minute challenge, because it's always good for the people who haven't done them already. Quite a few people have. But we're going to see, I think there's a couple of people got some blind bloopers or blind fails, and old Pat said he's got them. So what I'll do is I'll turn the mic to Pat. Go on, Pat.
Okay. It's when I bought a new pressure cooker a few years ago now, and I spilt some water on the surface, and I was cooking a piece of chicken for my tea. So I wiped up the water, put the chicken in the pressure cooker, put the cloth on the draining board and went off. Came back 6 months later and the cloth was in the pressure cooker and the chicken was on the draining board. But I had a very nice broth for my tea.
I second it was clean then. Floor cloth and chips.
Yeah. I had a friend too who didn't have any sense of smell, and she was doing cheese on toast for her husband, except she grated the soap.
Oh, no. That's not good.
Anyone else got any? Come on, we've all done something wrong as a blind person. Anything from this end?
Oh, right. Andy's got a story as well.
Well, yeah.
Go on, Paul.
Well, I went to work one day, as usual, and I had this sweatshirt on. And I was on a half day because we were having a quiz that evening at work, so I went home for the afternoon. And I came home, and I was sat at my computer, and I put my hand up to where the buttons are normally on the sweatshirt. Now, this particular sweatshirt didn't have buttons, but I noticed to my horror that I'd actually gone to work wearing the sweatshirt back to front. And it's one of those that's easily done. There is you can tell which way round it is, but there's no label on the back, and the neck is almost rounded, almost right the way, pretty well. It's one of those.
Stop making excuses.
Yeah.
But it's quite... It's got a little pattern on the front, but for some reason I couldn't find the pattern.
You've got to be thankful that everyone's so preoccupied with their own lives that they're not looking at you.
I don't think anybody noticed anyway.
Oh, they're always too polite.
It's when you put your trousers on the wrong way.
Have you got any more of me, Karen? Do you like to embarrass me?
How long have you got?
How many podcasts have you got?
Yeah. Any more?
Oh, yeah, I've got one.
Oh, good.
Go on, they'll pick you up there anyway.
This was an ex-boyfriend of mine. We'd seen this Chinese restaurant in town. And we read the menu outside and he said, oh, that's cheap, we'll come back here for a meal. So, of course, that was me, very uninspired. Bit of a row and a tiff. What do you mean we'll go back there because it's bloody cheap? I don't want to go there. So I said, all right, we'll go. And we walked in. I stood there at this little hatch and I said, a table for two, please. And the bloke went, no tables. Well, what sort of bloody restaurant is this? Table for two, please.
Massage
and he started
problem.
Dragging me on the arm, my fella, to take me out. Yeah, it was. It was a takeaway.
Thanks, Willie. Yeah. Do you want to do a two-minute challenge, Rob?
What have we got to do?
You've basically got 2 minutes to talk about your summer memories of school, but you've only got 2 minutes.
Okay, right. I'll do that.
You don't need to have it 2 minutes. It's pretty powerful. Right, Rob Clark with his two-minute challenge starting now.
Oh, hang on. Oh, I'm starting now?
Yeah.
Right, okay. All right.
You're recording.
All right, then, yeah, it's Rob here. I was at St Vincent's from 79 to 92. As I say, loads of memories. I can't think of anything now. I was talking to Mike the other month, something I do remember, when Brother Ambrose came over. I think it was from New Zealand, Mike?
Australia.
From somewhere, like Australia, and he came over and brought us all loads of toys and stuff, and we went to see where he was living over here and fed the chickens and all that kind of stuff, and I always remember that. Remember Miss Ward's class, very, very happy memories of Miss Ward's class, meeting her dad and Stella, her sister, going to her house and stuff like that. Miss Kennan as well. Miss Kennan was lovely. I always remember Miss Kennan and going to her place, and she was treated us very well. We used to have great Christmas parties when Miss Kennan was around because she was our junior DJ. So that was very good. Lots of things. It's funny. Nobody realised that I was leaving until I was actually going, and then no one said anything to me for years in school, and then all got upset when I was leaving and said, haven't you changed so much? Very nice. That was Miss Marion Foy, though. Miss Marion was always lovely, one of my best friends from school, and everyone was my best friend from school. I don't think I fell out with anyone, really. Oh, come on, 2 minutes has got to be up soon. Hey, I don't know. What can we say? Lots of memories. Junior school memories. I always remember Miss O'Donnell. She was great, standing teacher there for Mrs. Armstrong. She was a great pianist, Miss O'Donnell. Great singer as well, always remember her. Mrs. Cunliffe, we were only talking about her 5 minutes ago. We remember Mrs. Cunliffe and her unique way of playing the piano. Of course. Yes, oh really? Oh right, okay. Okay, I didn't know. Oh right, yeah. I remember her name, but I didn't know. Yes, indeed. Well, oh, there we go. Time's up. Thanks goodness for that. That was rubbish, that, wasn't it? Hey, I'll be voted off the committee after that nonsense.
Yeah, you probably will, yeah. Saying that, Rob, I can remember you doing an audio boo.
Yeah,
a while ago. It was like, it's going to be a short audio boo.
Yeah.
An hour and a half later, he still
had a show. No. I had to do it in three parts.
You did, actually, yeah. Are you going to do one, Tanya?
I went to St Vincent's from 77 to 84, of course.
Taking 2 years off yourself there.
I remember a lot, actually, because I was in infants, just infants and juniors, and got a lot of memories. Just New Brighton was one of my favourite memories of going there. I didn't love school, but there's some good memories like New Brighton, Christmas parties, what else? I can't remember really. Miss Ward, she was a brilliant teacher, and she even remembered me years later after I come back. Some teachers didn't, but Mrs. Armstrong was a fantastic teacher. I even remember her doing English classes and all the things she used to teach, like nouns, adverbs, verbs, and I always remember teaching us that, and the magazine we did 1 year. And we lost out on this programme just because we've got the contents page. That's the thing I remember. I remember people playing chopsticks on the piano, and Mr. Wilson not liking it, people playing chopsticks on the pianos, and it wasn't very good for the hands.
Well, if you played anything on the piano, you didn't like it, did you?
And then what else do I remember? Gosh. Going out to different day trips, spam sandwiches in the infants, and teas at the infants, spam sandwiches and ginger beer. Who remembers that? Just being on the climbing frames and singing "I'm the King of Castle, You're the Dirty Rascal," what we used to say, we'd climb up there. I've got different school photos, and one with loads of people on there. That'll be, it's really scary when I put that up on Facebook one day.
Yeah, I was on that one.
And
it was scary then, wasn't it?
One I've got, there's one that people haven't seen yet that I've got put on. I can't think what else. Oh, loads of stuff. I can't think what else to say, actually. But when you put on the spot, like, the meals, the school meals, I hated fish fingers, and I still do. The smell makes me feel sick. But I'm
Well done, good one.
Go on then. So when you hear that,
we've had you on mic, so
okay.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, I remember one of the best outings we ever had. We had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was the minibus went down, and the Blue Hillman Inn that belonged to the school was driven by Sister Rosalie. And honestly, that was one time when we said the prayers in the car, I meant them. She just went straight across the red lights at the East Lancs Road, and we were heading for London. We were going to see the Tutankhamun exhibition in 1971. We stopped halfway down at, I'm not sure if it was Sister Rosalie's family friend, for breakfast, and we had to also fix a puncture on the car. We got to London about 7 o'clock, and we were queuing for about an hour and a half, 2 hours to get in to see the Tutankhamun exhibition. And one of the lads there, Jimmy Kempthorne, who was about 6'9" at the time, he actually fainted in the queue waiting outside the Egyptian room and knocked an Egyptian vase off the wall. He ended up being taken around the exhibition in a wheelchair, I remember that. And we walked out. And although it was a great exhibition and an experience, the sad thing was, for those who couldn't see it, everything was behind glass in glass cases. And of course, they didn't have Braille descriptions or anything like that in that time. But it was a lovely day, a lovely trip, but a very, very long day. But obviously, it's something that will always stay in the mind, particularly with it being the Tutankhamun, the mask was there and everything. And so that was one of the main days out I think I can ever remember from school. Well, I remember when we got back, it was very, very late and we had to go straight to bed. But also while I was at school, you know, I was there from 65 to 72. I remember when I left school, I left school twice, a couple of times flying home to Jersey.
I should let him carry on, that was good though.
We can always get him back for a proper interview.
Yeah.
That is the downside, isn't it, of doing the 2 minute challenge? You do occasionally get back.
But he's got so many good memories, he was saying on the train.
I know, we can get some more.
Do they not even let you touch the
mask? No, just in glass cases.
Rick, do you want to do the 2 minute challenge, Kylie? Kylie.
Get everybody to do it this time, and we'll do it next time.
Do it next time. Oh, you get these people who chicken out. Right, well, what we'll do is we'll wrap up. We'll get this on episode 16 of the podcast coming out beginning of September. So everyone having a good time?
Yeah.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll get rid of them all soon. No. No. Danielle's here for the weekend, aren't you?
Yeah.
And we're going to the theatre tonight to watch Evita, and she's going to sing all the way through it.
Yeah, that's the one.
And you had a good journey over yesterday?
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah.
Has Karen been all right to you?
She's been lovely, yes, don't be mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been ganging up on me actually all the time since the
arrival. He loves it, don't listen.
Well, yeah.
Somebody else
did?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so, well, right, guys, well, thanks very much. And we'll all say ta-ra. See ya.
Bye.
Why not email us at podcast@svupa.co.uk?
Thanks to everyone who turned up for the Manchester meetup. Sounds like you all had a really good time. And as we said earlier, we're hoping to have one in Liverpool and one in the Northeast later on in the year. So if you want to get involved, or you want to let us know that you'd like, that you're interested, or as we said, if you want to have one in your area of the country, let us know and we'll try and help you sort it out. And that's podcast@svopa.co.uk, and other contact details will be given at the end.
No worries. Thanks, Joe. And we're going to move on to an interview which we have done last week with Phil Longworth. a lot of people know Phil. He went to school, I think it was in the 70s. He didn't actually say, did he, on the interview?
He didn't, sneaky thing. He kept his age very quiet.
He did. So I think it was late 60s, early 70s. But he'll shout at me if we're wrong anyway. And we managed to get him. And it's great talking about some of the things he did at school and the achievements he's done ever since. So I'm going to hand over to Phil. And so take it away.
Hi everyone, we have got Phil Longworth with us today. He's kindly agreed to do an interview, to step in. Hiya Phil.
Hiya.
Good to have you on. We've had Jim on, obviously your predecessor in your current role, but obviously yeah. your journey to that position is completely different than Jim's. So we'll start off if we can a little bit. We'll start with school. Everyone wants to know about, you know, what you got up to and the trouble you caused or not while you were at school and your memories and the things you liked and didn't like.
I didn't like rhubarb, liver, and green cabbage.
Is that still the case?
I've tried rhubarb since, but liver doesn't get anywhere near the plate. So I don't like that, certainly. That was the first meal on the first day.
Oh,
I remember
no.
with affection eating bacon sandwiches. They weren't even toasties then, but you dipped the bread into the dripping. Oh. And that they were fantastic. I mean, you wouldn't get away with that now under healthy diets because we'll all have clogged arteries, no doubt. But absolutely loved that. You know, that's one of the things I remember. School days for me, I remember a lot about friends, you know, that have been life friends throughout, you know, and the extent to which I boarded on a weekly basis for the whole of my sort of 11 years at the school. And of course, when you're living that close to people, they become like brothers and sisters, you know, so you cannot speak to anybody for months or years and almost pick up instantly within minutes again, talking as if you've not lost contact with them, you know, over a period of time. And then great things I remember is, you know, some of the trips, the New Brighton trips are vivid in my mind. You know, used to love going on the Royal Iris and then being thrown around in a waltzer. You know, there was nothing better than that after fish and chips for your tea. And I'm amazed that more of us didn't throw up. But again, you remember that, and there's a sense at which you realise the community is much bigger than school then in those days, because there was this big world outside and taxi drivers took you for a day out. absolutely amazing stuff. And I suppose I look back now, because of course the world's changed, hasn't it? Many people now are educated within local schools for long periods, some of which may arrive at St Vincent's then because, you know, the needs change through that time, or they're approaching a critical time in their education. But you look back and think, if I hadn't have had those opportunities, I don't know that I'd be the person I was now. And I genuinely believe that. I think I would have gone in mainstream. I probably would have coped at a level, but I don't think it would have brought the personality of me out. I think I'd have probably just stayed as, you know, back of the class or front of the class, not being able to see the blackboard, you know, and just feeling as if you've not achieved. So for me, the school, I hold the school in great affection. And throughout my sort of work life at various times, I've also then had an interface with the school and I've been involved again at various levels, which is, it's surreal, but it's also feeling as if you're giving something back. And I remember one thing a few years back now, I was invited to give the trophies out, you know, on presentation day at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I've been privileged to do a whole load of things in my career and attend many, many massive functions, meet, you know, the great and good. But presentation day at your own school, there's nothing quite like it. You know, that memory will stick with me for years as well. We weren't angels, you know. I can remember times at school where One time we were washing a minibus. Five of us left of our own devices, and we were obviously larking about a bit with hose pipes, and one of the sisters, Sister Rosalie, came out and had a real go at us. I can't remember who had the hose pipe in the hand, but they turned it on her and absolutely drowned her while she was having a go at us. And I remember another time when we were in the power cuts and we were all being sent home early. So it was like last night of term, this particular night. And everybody was larking about generally. And one of the teachers came in and sort of said, right, everybody in bed in 5 minutes, stop larking around like this. They disappeared and came back to the old metal fire bucket full of water sitting on top of a door. Now, again, talk about you do stupid things as kids. I mean, I could have killed the guy when he came through it. It made a bit of a noise. And we were all on report for that. Fortunately, we went home with the power cuts the day after and everybody seemed to forget it. And I remember another last night where we were having the famous pillar fight in the summer. Windows open. Paddy Rodaway was involved in this one, and another lad in our group threw a pillar at him, and Paddy ducked, and it went sailing out the window between King's Wing and the chapel. And we got up the following morning, and Joe Lampson said, "Who the bloody hell's been parachuting out the window? Who couldn't wait?" But we'd done everything that night. We fastened sheets together, put a hanger on the end of it, trying to hook this pillar up. None of us had any sleep at all. But yeah, it's a great, you know, affectionate memories, really. It's a great group of people, superbly committed staff, you know, and some of that commitment lives on today in the school. I remember people who came just as I was leaving, and they're still there coming towards the end of their careers as well, you know. And it's, there's something special about what the building brings out in everybody that's sort of been linked to it. I know for some people, because I've heard stories since, that the experience wasn't as good for them. You know, and I think we have to sort of recognise that. And I remember sad times. I remember every Sunday night coming back and getting in bed in school, and I would physically, before I went to sleep, walk the route home from Liverpool to Burton Wood, where I lived. And every time I got to the back gate and opened the door, I'd either gone to sleep or woke up the following morning. It was quite a strange one. So you remember that, well, I do. You remember those sorts of experiences. Yeah. But in amongst them, loads of laughs. I mean, we had some great times and did some crazy things. We had a car donated to us once that was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And it was a replica that somebody had, you know, built up. And it was parked in what were then the sort of the cow stalls where the current swimming bath is. And we could go up and see this car. And one time a few of us went up, and one or two of them were more wise than me about how you get a motor started. And there was a little bit of petrol residue left in this thing. So somebody joined wires in an appropriate place and the bloody engine kicks off. And we're driving down the sports field in this car with Joe Lampson running after us using some decent expletives, from what I recall. But again, they were the things that, yeah, you were made aware there's real safety issues here, lads. But we were also allowed to be lads, and do the things. So, which is, you know, whichever way you view it, the house parents, you know, were your house parents. They were your substitute parents in many ways, and you developed relationships with them, and they got to know you in terms of what made you tick outside of the educational environment. But no, some great experiences. And as I say, I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing today if I wasn't sort of encouraged to be, you know, a big fish in a small pond. I think that brought my confidence out.
Yeah. So what did you go on to do after leaving St Vincent's?
Well, reluctant to say, I was very good at music. I was okay at music and I was very interested in it. And once we got through the debate with the careers officer, who said, well, if you're into music, you could go and tune pianos. And I think I generally got across the message that you can do with whatever you want the tuning forks, but I'm not anywhere near them. And I went to study music at Mabel Fletcher College in Liverpool, and at the same time the aim was to do a couple of O-levels and a couple of A-levels over the two-year period, with a view to that stage then going on to uni afterwards. One of the most frustrating times of my life, I mean, I went from the cloisters of St. Vincent's to suddenly having to travel from Burntwood into Liverpool on a daily basis, leaving home at 6:30 in the morning to get in college for 9 o'clock, and at the end of the day doing another sort of 2.5-3 hours journey back out to Burntwood on public transport, mixed public transport and taxis. And I could get into any of the music ensembles, so I must have been reasonable in terms of playing the clarinet. But then they'd all sort of sit there and say, right, we're going to practice this bit, bar 27. So you'd open the music. I could read music, just quite slow at it. So by the time I'd found bar 27, they'd played it all, and then they were shouting bar 102. And so that just got really, really frustrating. And I only did that for sort of 3 months up to Christmas and thought, I just can't stand this. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to fail. And I think I was also, at the same time, when I look back now, I was really tired. There were long days, you know, the concentration and, you know, the newness. And we were travelling between three sites in the city. It wasn't even one campus, depending on what you were doing. So I jacked it in at Christmas with everybody panicking, just saying, what the heck are you going to do? And then in January, I just started to apply for any jobs doing anything. And was fortunate in February, got an interview for a stock controller in a tool supply company in Warrington, which turned out to be one of the best things I could ever have done, because I did stock control for a few months. They then recognised the gift of the gab. I was encouraged to do some of the sales office side. The gift of the gab was even better. Then I was provided with a driver, and I went out as a rep. And actually made quite a bit of money in that time, you know, doing some of the rep stuff and selling products, and also then had an opportunity to do some of the systems, the computer systems. Computers were just being installed with the massive discs that looked like a pizza box.
Yeah.
These days, you know, it's and I did wages, so I got a real grounding in a lot of disciplines, because this was a company that employed about 40-50 people. But I always knew that when I was old enough, I wanted to go and train as a technical officer for the blind, what was the old home teacher for the blind. And I was fortunate then at sort of 19 and a half to be the youngest person selected for training, because there was a 21-year limit before they would normally accept people. But I got through the process and went into to training and did that for 9 months. Then was fortunate to get offered a job at Christopher Grange as a technical officer. Did that for 3 years. Then went to RNIB as an employment officer. Did that for 3 years. Then was asked to lead on a project nationally that was looking at how RNIB may cope delivering employment services when the funding was changed from a block contract to, you know, being paid for the jobs that you do. So I led a pilot exercise in the Northwest and in East Midlands to test that out and see whether it could work, and it was viable before it rolled out across the country. And it proved to be okay. There was a lot of worries initially that there wouldn't be enough throughputs and, you know, therefore you couldn't have enough staff available to do the job. But for a few years after I left, it worked. And when my children were born, my first child, I was approached by Christopher Grange then again with a view to they've got some issues within the centre, and just would I mind, because I know how the centre should work, just having a chat with people. Got a long story short, I sort of did a very quick assessment of what I thought the issues were, and, you know, really honest and I think on the ball. And then they advertised to replace the manager who had left just before I went in to give an assessment. And I applied for that job and got that job. So I was more solid than I was working out of Liverpool at the time that my children were growing up. You know, so it's I was able to spend more time at home then and be part of that process. You know, which is great. And I was a trustee then for a couple of charities, one of which was Liverpool Voluntary Society for the Blind. At the time where Jim was appointed, my predecessor, So it's funny how paths cross, you know, as you're coming through with your careers and such like. And then I got to the point in 1998 where I just wanted a different sort of challenge. I'd worked constantly in the world of blind services, and I felt that I could probably broaden my own experience if I did something else. And a job came up as Chief Exec of Age Concern in St. Helens, which I applied for and fortunately got appointed, and did that for 6 years. And then we merged three of the age concerns into one organisation, really anticipating some of the funding cuts. Little did anybody expect them to turn out to be as bad as they were. But by merging those three organisations, we were able, during the periods of the cuts in the following years, to keep hold of services. Yeah, we had to change the delivery of some of them, but we didn't lose one service. And I believe that's because we managed the administration more efficiently, and therefore you could keep the services relatively well funded. And we looked at developing other activities then, you know, trading activities. We were fortunate. One of our premises was a Grade 2 listed building called the Mansion House, and it was a mansion house. So, you know, on a Friday initially, when all the service users had gone home at 3:30, it's like the hit squad and her would come in, transform this building, and we would have weddings over the weekend.
Wow. You know,
and hire out. And of course, that then raised money that came in to support the charity at a time when it was beginning to lose funds because the grants were being cut. So it's just about thinking a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And then I moved to, you know, for personal reasons, I moved house last year, came into Liverpool, because a lot of my social networks are in Liverpool. Not even knowing at that stage that Jim was thinking of retiring from Bradbury Fields. And then he announced that he was going to retire. And several people said to me, you're going to apply, you're going to apply. And at that stage, I always did know that I would come back to services for the blind. That's part of the career plan, if there was one. But I didn't know in what capacity, because a few years earlier, while still working at Age UK, I was invited to join the Visionary Board as a trustee. And in 2011, when Visionary was in some difficulties, I was appointed as chair. So at that stage, I didn't know whether that was actually how I would get back involved with, you know, services for the blind sort of thing. And I wouldn't have applied for this job if it wasn't for the fact that the day before the closing date for applications, the City Council in Liverpool announced that there would be 30% funding cuts to the sector. And it was only that that then made, I felt like, right, I know I can do this. I know I can help with that. I've got the experience. I've lived with funding cuts for 5 years.
Mm.
And I'm not sort of negative, and I don't intend sitting back and letting them hit us. We have to do whatever we can for ourselves, and we have to think differently because we've done things a certain way for many years. Doesn't mean actually now that it's the best way either to do them, and we should reflect on everything we do and, you know, make them as effective as we can do. So, to cut a long story short, applied for the job, was fortunate and appointed, and then joined in April this year. So I've just done coming up to 4 months worth now, and it feels like I've been there for ages. The staff have been really welcoming. The trustees and staff and volunteer groups are very close and, you know, want to make things work. It's been a great organisation, you know, at this stage, so not inherited any major problems. So it's just about saying, right, what's the business plan now? What do we want for the future? And understanding what is it people are telling us, you know, and listening to what people have said to us. So I'm very committed to the UK Vision Strategy because a load of work's been done nationally around that. Also committed to the Seeing It My Way outcomes, which is part of an outcome of that UK Vision Strategy. And they're the 10 sort of things that I always think they talk about outcomes. They're aspirations to what you and I might want to achieve. We want to be able to volunteer if we want to. We want to know about our eye condition if we want to. We want to be able to get around if we want to. You know, We want to be able to use technology to its best ability if we want to.
Yeah.
And to me, they're very, very real things that relate to anybody of any age if they want to.
Yeah.
So we've done, at the moment, we've started to assess our services based upon those outcomes. And we deliver on an awful lot of them. But what I'm saying to everybody is actually, each organisation, you don't have to deliver them all yourselves, because I get fed up when I hear about, you know, competition with other providers. Well, actually, it isn't about competition if they're better at that element than we are. You know, and like, we might be better at some other bits. Recognise that certain people do things better.
Yeah.
And, you know, if resources are being squeezed now, use the resources in the best way. And I think one of the good things for me, because I've been around too long in the sector now, generally, in the voluntary sector, is we're almost going back to the old days of what money can you throw in and what money can I throw in? And by it was working together, do we get a better result?
Yeah.
And I think that is great, because people are having to get there again now. I think we've had a few years where people have just looked at their own survival and their own organisations. And it's got to be about blind and partially sighted people for me. That's the only motivator that I have. What's that individual's person's needs? And how do we best help that person across any agency? The agency doesn't much matter. It's that we can get what we need to help us all live independent lives.
Mm. Yeah.
Anything else you want to bring in before we close, Phil?
I don't know. All, I think all I would say to listeners, you know, because we'll have people, I feel like the old, I won't swear on this, but you know what I mean, the old person now, or one of the older people of the OPA. And that's been the first time in my life that you suddenly think, God, I've got people who are sort of 20 years younger than me listening to this. The only thing I'd say is, if you've got a dream, go for it. And if you want to achieve it, it may be hard, you know, it's not easy, and we all have our ups and down days, but go for it, because there's usually a way around most things. You've just got to think creatively as well. And if you feel and demonstrate that you're enthused and you want to give something a go, you will be infectious for the people around you. And one of our biggest things, I think, are our personalities. You know, let your personality come through. You know, people will admire us, and they do admire us for what we achieve. So if we want to do something that's a bit off the wall, go for it.
Yeah, good advice.
That. It is, excellent.
Well, thanks very much, Phil. That's been a brilliant interview, and lots of good advice and inspiration for anybody who's listening.
Right, my pleasure. And I should say now, should I? We're just starting to think of Christmas at work, so if I don't speak to you all before, Merry Christmas.
Why not follow us on Twitter?
Thanks, Phil, for that brilliant interview. It was good of you to take the time to talk to us. And now, moving swiftly on, we're going to go for lesson two of Around the School in 10 Lessons.
Now for our new section, Around the School in 10 Lessons.
In today's lesson, we're going to have a walk around what was the infant section and then walk down the main corridor on the first and the second floor. And we're pleased to say that Danielle's joined us as well today.
Hi everyone.
So we're going to start with the infant section, which when I was there, you had four classrooms. And the section, you've got two big classrooms, one each side, and you've got two small ones. One was like a kitchen area when I was there, and then another classroom on the other side. And it was, the infants were on the far side, and then you had a little dressing up section, little house corner, and a little library, which was upstairs. And I think we'll stay in that room, because that changed when you were there, wasn't it, Danielle?
It did, but even before it kind of dramatically changed. I knew it as the infants as well. But when I was there, instead of being like the four classrooms, there was two classrooms. So there was the big one sort of as you went in, and then there was another big one kind of at the back. And then that room that you mentioned that had the little kitchen in, that when I was there, that was literally just used as a kitchen for kind of baking and doing bits. And then the little room on sort of the other side to that was the library. And we had a, you know, a CCTV thing in there as well. And then in the back classroom, that was the year one classroom with Mr. Waite and Mrs. Keenan, if anyone remembers them. And the front classroom was the year two classroom, which was Mrs. Gallagher and I can't remember who was LSA in that room. But that was the year two classroom anyway. So and then yeah, it went just well, a few years before I left, it became the youth club. And it had a couple of phases as the youth club. When they first moved it into that kind of little sort of part of school, if you like, all four rooms were used for the youth club. The front one had the pool tables and bits in, and some sort of sofas and that. The middle rooms where there was a kitchen and there was a little TV room. And then the back room also had, I think it had another pool table in, and some more sofas and kind of the music equipment and stuff. And then about a year or two just before I left, the back room was turned into the sixth form common room. So it was literally like anyone other than sixth form was not allowed in. And there was loads of kind of comfy seats in there, and we had a fridge and, you know, music player and what have you. So, yeah, it's been a few things.
Very nice. We didn't get out like that, did we? Might we didn't do sixth form in our day, did we?
That's it. We didn't have any, so it was all group playrooms or group rooms, and that was it. Saying that, though, we did have, which we'll come onto another time, but we obviously had the lodge, which for the boys was a separate route, a separate building, and we did have obviously that. So I suppose it was like a fifth year group, so similar.
Yeah, it was, and we had one for the girls, but you weren't. I mean, when it was sort of after prep time, if you remember, sort of 7:30 till 9, you all had to be seen to be participating in activities and all being together. You did, didn't
yeah. You? Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some of the teachers I had. I remember when I was in the infants with Mrs. King, and I didn't actually have Mrs. King, though. She took a couple of years off, I think I had a Mrs. Hunter, and I wasn't in the what would have been reception then, because obviously it was first, second, third, and fourth year infants. There was three infant years when I were there, or four, I should say. And so the first two were in the big classroom on the far side. Mrs. Allen had the small classroom opposite the kitchen, and me and Stephen Barlow used to sit just outside that classroom because there weren't enough room in it.
It's a tiny room, that one, for being a classroom.
Yeah, so the big room was obviously the top infants, and there's a lot more sort of play space as well. For Fridays, you tend to have playtime. But that was pretty much all I remember it as, so obviously it changed quite a bit. And you don't remember that at all, really, do you, Jo?
No, because I only went through the senior school, so it wasn't really a part of the school that I ever had anything to do with.
So as we go out the infants, before you come to the double doors, there is a set of stairs which go up to, is it Bridgman up there? Yeah.
It is now. It wasn't.
And before we go up the stairs, there's another little room there, which is now the soft play room on the left-hand side at the bottom of the stairs, which I think used to be a sewing room or something years ago. Someone hopefully will come back and remind us.
It wasn't when I was there, but I know that's what it used to be.
We'll go through the double doors, and then it's all the sort of the girls' room next. So I'll hand over to Jo, and she knows what it's used for now anyway. So
what it's used for now is, you mean what we have used for the reunions, don't you? That room, yeah, the conference room.
Yeah, because that's now a conference room, but you'll remember it more as a playroom, Jo.
Well, it was the playroom for the junior girls, which again I didn't really, I only saw for a couple of weeks, but it was part of Bridgman, which was for the junior girls in our day. So that was where, and there was a room off there, I think, if I remember rightly, where they had the dining tables, where they used to have the, you know, breakfast and tea and everything. But yeah, like comfy settees and lockers. I think everyone had a locker for keeping, you know, like sweets in or whatever, things like that, and bits and pieces.
What was it when you were there, Danielle?
When I first started, it was the staff room, which was always quite funny, actually, because when the bell used to go for sort of, like, if it was break time and the bell went for the lesson after break, the primary would, of course, always be walking along that corridor to go back to the, you know, to the primary department, and we would always be overtaken by, like, big unknown teachers from the senior school, which was always quite entertaining because we never had anything really to do with them in those days when I was in sort of early primary. But yeah, the sort of big or the bigger room where the massive telly is was the staff room. And then there was a little, room in the middle. I can't actually remember what that was when I very first started, but now it's got, well, it had, I don't, as of 3 years ago anyway, it had the sort of boardroom table in it, which was, it's a really old, really thick wooden table, and it can seat probably at a guess about 10, if not more, people around it. And then the sort of end room, which some people will know as the green room, at one point that used to be the boardroom, but it's now sort of the other part of the conference suite, and it has a carousel of computers in it, so it's changed a couple of times as well. And then there's the a little kitchen in that sort of where the little room is in the middle, just off that is a kitchen, and that used to be brilliant because when we were in like our last couple of years, we used to have study lessons when we were in like sixth form. And it was quite often we would, a sort of little group of us would go and work in the conference room because it was out the way, it was quiet, you could all get on a computer, all on the internet, and it was all lovely and what have you. And on more than one occasion, we would go and help ourselves to the odd biscuit or two out the cupboard and just make ourselves a nice cup of tea or what have you, and no one was any the wiser. So that was all right as well.
In that same section, where the computers are now, if I remember right, that used to be, years ago, used to be the typing room before that moved upstairs, which it's not the typing room anyway, probably don't have one now, don't need one the same. But that was in there for quite a number of years. And the side of that used to be, I don't know if it was there when you were there, Joe, used to be the telephone room where you used to call home. You see the little room with a telephone in there. And now next to that, or directly through that room, is where the caretaker sort of stays and keeps an eye on things. So next to that, you've got the main hall, if I remember rightly. And then there's a small lounge off there. I remember going in it once, but I don't really remember much more than that, like a small room off the...
Yeah, we did. We went in it on our last, when we were leaving. We were in fifth year, and Sister Josephine took us in there for like a pep talk, you know, just to kind of talk to us all about what we were going to do and things like that. I think that's where she did that. But do you remember, I don't know whether you'll have done this, don't you, but when we were there, we used to do reception as well. You used to have to do reception for a few days when you were in fifth year. Do you remember, Michael?
I never did it, but I do remember people doing it, yes.
Yeah, I remember Sarah and I doing it. We were paired up to do it. I'd forgotten about that till now.
Should we go upstairs then?
It's probably easier if we go right to the very end, as in if you've come up the stairs by the sort of infants, and then maybe work back along, and then we can go right along the end, like from one end to the other, if you see what I mean.
Right. Yeah. Well, that end when I first started there in 83 was for, they used to put the girls who had other disabilities as well as a sight problem were put, regardless of age, of seniors, I think. I don't think the junior girls were put there, I can't remember. But any senior girls with kind of other disabilities were put in Myers Court. And then they changed it. And that was changed to being for the fifth year girls, and that was just where we were for 1 year. which I think was a change for the better, because some of the girls, they were mixed ages when they, you know, and they wanted to be with their own class, and they weren't, they were all put together just because they had other disabilities. So yeah, it was much better when they changed it.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. I'm just trying to think. It's a funny one, Bridgman, because when I was there, the whole corridor, literally from the infant's end to sort of the laundry end, if you like, that whole top corridor was Bridgman.
Right.
But I don't think I ever went along that corridor until I was probably about 12, just because when I was in sort of the primary in Caulfield, you didn't really kind of go it into the other groups as such. So I don't know what it was like in sort of those first years, but I do know then when, as I say, when I went up there for the first time, it was a couple of weeks after it had been all redecorated, and they'd given it a massive overhaul and turned it from sort of whatever it was beforehand to how it is now, with the kind of single bedrooms with the little pods in, with the ensuite bathrooms and all that, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's lovely now, isn't it?
It is,
with the little ensuites and everything. Because when Myers Court was, you went up the stairs, and when you got up, there were bathrooms, and then you went in, and there was a dining room stroke kitchen with two long tables where we used to have breakfast or tea. And then you went along the corridor, and there were either twin bedrooms or there were a couple of single bedrooms. And then when you went further along the corridor, that was where our care staff, and that was Mrs. Ryan, used to have her room. And then there was another bathroom, there was another little bathroom. And then we had a lounge at the end of that with a TV in it, and like, I think there was a piano in there as well.
Yeah, every lounge had piano in
it.
They were big on them.
And then when you went further along the corridor, that was when you got to what was then Bridgman, and that was the junior girls.
Yeah. Just to add in, sorry to interrupt you, Joe. I'm just going to put you on loudspeaker because Catherine's just come up.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
In fact, one question Danielle or Joe might remember. Didn't the staff room used to be directly opposite the top of the stairs where the lounge is now?
Yes, it did, I think. As I say, I can't remember seeing it, but I know, I think it might have even been Sue and Marie were telling me once that it was like, because where now it's a funny shaped lounge, isn't it? Because it's not quite a rectangle. But it apparently, sort of however many years ago, I think it was almost like split into two sort of smaller rooms, I think. I'm sure it was Sue who told me.
Do you remember that, Jo?
Right. I don't remember that at all, no, because like I said, I didn't do the I wasn't in the juniors really, so I only know it from kind of brief encounters with that part of the school. I do know that Bridgman then were, the junior girls were in four bedrooms, so either three or four girls shared a room.
Yeah. About right.
And that's about all I can remember about it, to be honest.
Right, is there anything else upstairs before we just do that last section downstairs?
I know that some of the, there were other staff that had, because I know Sister Frances, who is now Sister Patricia, had a room up there as well. That was where she had her room.
Yeah, and didn't there used to be, you know, like obviously when you go upstairs to Bridgman at both ends, you can then go up another flight to the attics, can't you?
Yes, you can.
I think there's possibly a little room like at each end there before you go into the main attic as well. There definitely is at one end, but I'm sure there's one at both.
Right. I know we used to dare each other to go up the stairs at night to go to the attic.
So did we. Yeah, we never got very far.
No.
No.
But I know at the other end where the kitchen stairs. I know we've sort of walked around there a few times, but I can't remember what she was called, but there was one of the teachers who used to do sort of additional, I mean, with me it was spelling, because I still can't spell now. And we used to have to go up there usually every week and have additional spelling lessons. And I can't remember who it was, but it was up them stairs. May have been the second flight up. It was a couple of flights up. But I do remember...
Wasn't Miss Burns?
Yes, I think it was.
Because didn't she also do... Because you know we used to have the fancy dress discos? Do you remember that, Michael?
I do sort of... Yeah, she used to do a lot of the costume sort of thing for pantos and concerts.
Yeah, and you could go and borrow things from her, like wigs and things.
Yes, yeah.
And anything. And she'd help you with fancy dress costumes. She did that side of things as well. She sort of did extra stuff, didn't
she?
There
was a kitchen up there as well, if I remember rightly. We might have used... You know, you sort of these thoughts there, thinking, am I right?
Yeah,
but I do seem to remember a kitchen being up there and doing some baking up there at one time, but... In in the juniors but can't say for definite. And just have a feeling.
I wonder if that's where what we know or where the clinic was when I started up until about when did that move downstairs? It was probably
about 4 years ago.
A few years ago, wasn't it? There used to be when you came out of sort of Bridgman, then like on the left, you went through quite a big sort of wide door. The door to it was really big, wasn't it, and heavy. And then you went into like a corridor, and there was a, I think there was a room off to either side, wasn't
there? Yeah, there was a room to either side. One had a bed in, another, and then the one
and
on
it
the left,
had a kitchen, didn't it, as well?
The one on the left had a bed in it, and the one to the right had a bed and bathroom in.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and then when you went through, there was like a kitchen bit.
In the main room, that's right.
We were treated and stuff because, like the nurse always used to clean the stuff in that kitchen.
In the sink.
Yeah, because there's like a fridge there and a sink with like a draining board.
And there was a really old dentist chair as well that you were never allowed to sit in. I've never seen it used, but it was a really, really old dentist chair.
But your head went like on two pads, like. At either side, like it wasn't a headrest, it was two pads that held your head up.
When I was there, I don't know if the pharmacy we won't cover this properly on this one, but that used to be on the main corridor down sort of where past sort of near the hall, and that chair used to be there and it was used because the dentist used to come into school. Then they started having a mobile dentist, so I remember that.
Our dentist still comes, but ever since I've been there, and I've been there nearly 11 years now, you've never used it.
No, they always just use a normal chair, usually, don't they?
Yeah.
Or even bring their own.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've forgotten about the clinic being up there.
But as well, near the clinic, when you come out of Bridgman, like, from that end, on that, if you go straight ahead, there's another door that, I don't know what it was used for ages ago, but it's now used as a music room.
Oh, is it? See, that's different even to when I left.
Yeah, because that's where I do singing, and it's got, like, a piano in there and other, like, instruments and stuff, and it's got, like, all posters and that up there that have all, like, the information about different instruments and stuff on.
Oh, that's quite
good.
Wow,
that's different.
And that's near the, sort of, the stairs section for the kitchen stairs, that around that area, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, definitely changed.
Hasn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right, well, what we'll do then is we'll walk down those stairs to, obviously, the top of where the kitchen is. We're not going to go down the kitchen tonight. There used to be in that section, I don't know if it was there when you guys were there, but there used to be the gong. Do you remember it, Joe?
The gong, they have still got the gong.
In the hall.
Is it in the hall now? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say I've seen it, but I don't know where it was now.
Yeah, that's the clinic now where the gong used to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just used to be literally at the top of the corridor, the gong, on the in the main corridor section. It wasn't put away or anything like that. It was just on the open corridor. So we'll walk back, not that much, I don't think, on that section, but between sort of the kitchen and then walk back to the main hall, the main, the front door. Is there any, what's there? Anyone know anything, have memories on that yet?
When you go through the double doors on, like as if you're walking back towards the front hall, the first door on the right-hand side leads into like another little sort of corridor, And immediately on the right-hand side there is another doorway, which leads into a room, which, is that still Reaper Graphics?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where Marion Heskus works.
Diane Waite.
And Diane Waite. Yeah, they all work in there, don't they?
Mm-hmm. And that's where, like, all the Minolta stuff and, like,
inbox stuff
and all books that
gets and produced, doesn't it?
Like, other leaflets, and as well, we do badges for, like, different places as well.
Yeah.
So it's like a little
production place.
Yeah. And then if you carry on going, if you come out of Reaper Graphics and carry on going down the corridor, that's where, how you get into, like, where the nuns' convent was.
Yeah, where the sister's house is next door. There's a little adjoining corridor.
That isn't used anymore, but on the left, what is now, it's the deputy head's office that we use. So, like,
which is a nice office, actually, because it's a corner office, but it's got loads of windows in it, so it's really light.
Yeah, and it's right at the front of the school as well. You can see it, like, out all the way out to the front as well.
Yeah, it's quite nice, that one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember anything about that.
No, it was out of bounds for us,
don't
wasn't it?
We used it. No, we didn't, no.
Well,
we didn't.
As of... I'm just thinking. I think they moved Reaper Graphics downstairs because it used to be upstairs, sort of the corridor above the main corridor of classrooms. That came downstairs probably about 8 years ago, maybe. And around the same sort of time, they started using the office that is now the deputy head's office, was used for whoever was head of care at the time. But before then, I don't think that corridor was actually used other than to be an entrance to the sister's house, so none of the kind of pupils ever used to go in there, so that's probably why.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this. I'm learning loads.
So, what's next then? Is it the head's office next?
No.
No, there's a room. There's a store cupboard.
Is all where
archives. A lot of the student kind of archive files and that are kept in there. But it's quite a big room, actually.
It is. It is.
Saying it's a store cupboard, it's quite big.
It is. It is like a. If you say. Like, it's about half of a classroom size, so it is quite a big room.
But no one ever goes in there either, so.
No.
But then it's the head's office. Yeah.
Right, which is totally different again, isn't it?
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah, because it the old head office used to have, like, that little light thing saying busy or whatever.
Yeah, because it used to be.
Where the resource room is now.
Yeah.
Well, when we were there, the head used to be go down past the chapel, past the set of stairs, and you had the so the office was the first door, and then Sister Josephine's was the second one. Yeah.
So
is there anything between the head's office and the front door then, or is that pretty much it?
Yeah. I mean, the little sort of lounge that you were talking about before that went off the main front door. They've put a door in on the main corridor wall now so that you can actually get into that room from the front hall but also from the main corridor, and that room is now the main school office.
Ah, right.
Yeah, they've put in it's like a stable door, so it opens sort of half and half.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's in there now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was really interesting, I think. Yeah,
because I thought that corridor would be quite, you know, it would be quite boring almost, really, because I didn't realise that so much had kind of been used there now.
I think up until a few years ago, when you were there, the main school office and the head's office were sort of in one place, then the deputy head was somewhere else. Head of care was somewhere else, and a few years ago it was kind of felt that everything should be more kind of centralized and nearer to the rest of the school for people sort of coming in. So everything sort of got moved around.
As well, that whole corridor's carpeted now.
Yeah.
It is. Don't like it, it's horrible. interesting.
Yeah, that was a real shock when I went back for the first reunion. And it was like weird, and you're like, what's this all about? Because it changes it acoustically and everything.
Look, I can remember when it was done, because your first reunion, it had already been done, hadn't it, Jo? But I was there a few years before when they still had the old floor. And that changed, and it brought back the memories from, you know, from years gone by. But as soon as they changed, it was just dead, you know, no sound or anything. So,
Change.
Well, what we'll do is I'll wrap that up now. I think I can hear the school bell going, so that's the end of the lesson. And and we will end, and we will all go to our next lesson. Right, well, thanks to Danielle Thomas and Catherine Leach for joining us on the Around the School in 10 Lessons. It was great, actually, to get an insight into the school now, because we've had some of the tours, but you don't really get to know what the building's used for, and especially that little bit at the top upstairs, which we hadn't a clue about and what it was. So it was fascinating. So thank you very much. And it's good to get the input of someone who's still at the school as well, isn't it?
It is, very much so, yeah, because it's Catherine 15, I think.
16.
So she's got a couple of years to go through sixth form, but it was fantastic to hear that she knew things about the school that we just had no idea about.
And also, I mean, we don't know who actually listens to the podcast besides, obviously, those who respond. So there may be some of the current students who listen to this. So if you do, you know, it's your podcast as well. And we're hoping to work more with the school over the coming months and years as well on here. So, you know, it's your podcast. It's, you know, have your say. Get in touch with us, podcast@svopa.co.uk.
Right, well, very quickly, we've come to the end of this month's podcast. So all it remains for us to do is to give you the contact details, as always, so that you can get in touch and have your say.
It is. So again, it's podcast@svopa.co.uk. If you want to catch up on all the old podcasts which we've done, search SVOPA in iTunes or your podcast software, or visit www.svopa.co.uk.
You can find us on Facebook, where we have a group and a page. We've got we've got around about 150 members on the group now. And there are some fascinating things get discussed on there, and people get in touch with each other, perhaps that, you know, haven't heard from each other for quite a few years. It's always nice to see. So all you have to do is to search SVOPA on Facebook.
And the same with Twitter, we're on there as well. And also on Audioboo, it's SVOPA, and you can follow me, Ike Allen, and you can follow Joe, who's joe.fishwick as well. One of the next things, what is coming out, is our CD, which will be a little bit of stuff you've heard. But what we do need to know is, some of you I know listen to the podcast and don't really mind if you don't receive the CD, because we're going to put it on the feed anyway. So if you can let us know, it just saves us a little bit of money of... which can go on the podcast and keep us running and keep things going.
Yeah, but we've got some great things coming up for the CD. And as Michael says, you will be able to access that as a podcast as well. So lots for you to look forward to.
We have. Should we give them a clue?
Go on if you want to.
Yeah, well, we've actually just interviewed Kevin Carey, who's the chair of RNIB. He is going to be on the next podcast with a small section on the CD, what's coming up. We've also had a good chat with John Patterson. And for the CD, because not everyone obviously hears the podcast, we're going to put a small part of the Phil Longworth interview, which you've just heard as well. And there's quite a few bits. And I think we're going to do a competition next month on the CD as well.
Yeah, why not? So all that remains now is for Michael to give you his contact details.
If you want to give me a shout, it's 0161 287 1841. Or 0793044465. So I hope to hear from you soon. And you guys take care until next month. So bye-bye from me.
And bye from me.
And bye from Bonnie, who you can hear in the background.
Snoring away as usual.
Yep. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.